now with more of Lake Effect Weekend on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. As the new year begins, many people, media outlets, and a plethora of online articles look back on the highlights of 2016.
According to the Motion Picture Association of America, an average number of 600 movies are released every year in the U.S. Although film contributor Dave Larson doesn't see every single film released, choosing the top films that came to Milwaukee is still a challenging and necessary task as a critic.
However, according to Larson, 2016 fell short. He composed a list of only the top six films, plus some honorable mentions. Larson joined me in the studio and explained why films of the past year, while mostly decent, did not leave a lasting impression.
This year just generally never took off for me. Even the fall movie season, which is supposed to be the time of year when all the good stuff, so-called, comes out, there were relatively few of those movies released, at least here in Milwaukee, during the last months of 2016. The problem for any Milwaukee-based film critic in doing a year-end roundup is that there are some movies that are good or probably pretty good that don't get here in time. Milwaukee is sort of a secondary market, so a number of movies were released with 2016 dates to be eligible for the Academy nominations that popped up in New York or Los Angeles. As far as Milwaukee goes, there are other, lesser-known things that might be good also that are going to trickle in during January, February, March, and every now and then even later than that.
So I imagine even with the movies that are available to watch here, you being a film critic and you needing to see so many movies in a year, what makes something memorable for you?
What makes anything striking to any particular person? I suppose some of this is very subjective too, quite frankly. I mean, some of the movies that struck me or things that struck me might pass other people by without too much comment. I mean, I have to think to myself, am I thinking about these movies for some reason? Was there something about the subject matter or the form the movie took that was not just different than the norm, though it could be a factor, but that actually compelled me in some way to engage more deeply with the subject of the film, whatever that might happen to be. And so, you know, I tend not to dismiss any genre of movie. I mean, I like, you know, there are romantic movies that I like. There are crime, gritty crime movies that I like. There are horror movies that I like. If I do like a top 100 films of the past century list for some reason, it would be all over the board with stuff like that. So I am looking for movies that deeply reach out, that break out of the commercial boxes that Hollywood and also non-Hollywood too. I mean, there are commercial boxes that so-called indie films in America are stuck inside of. There are commercial boxes that foreign films are in nowadays also. So I'm looking for something that escapes that, that transcends that a little bit.
So on your list here, instead of top 10, we have top 6 and some honorable mentions. So let's start with La La Land to begin with. What made that one of the top films here?
Well, it is a bittersweet, happy movie. It's a musical with good music. It has a fetching cast of young people dreaming of finding their way into creative endeavors. You know, it can be criticized as falling short technically from the expertise of a Gene Kelly, Debbie Reynolds movie, for example, or Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers. And yeah, I mean, true. But I think that this film captured the spirit of the best of those earlier movies, even if it didn't quite reach the level of expertise.
And shifting the genre specter to Western, we have Hell or High Water.
Yeah, contemporary Western, I guess. It is very much like a Western set in Texas of nowadays with the grizzled lawman, you know, looking for his opportunity to catch a band of brothers, literally two brothers who are robbing a particular chain of banks because the bank basically defrauded and foreclosed on the home of their mother. They have a grudge against the banking system, this particular bank. One brother is an ex-con, a criminal. The other is a nicer guy. And so there's an interesting contrast between the two brothers and the lawman who is about, I think, 2 weeks away from retirement and wants to, you know, break one last case before. So it's kind of a crime movie, but the setting is so dusty, you know, Texas panhandle. It really looks like a Western to me.
And I would categorize this next one as an indie that struck big commercially, Moonlight.
Moonlight is a wonderful movie in so many ways, both in terms of form and in content. The form tells its story interestingly in several different parts, looking at the phases of life of a particular person, an African-American boy at the beginning and man at the end, who is wrestling with, you know, sexual identity in an environment in which sexual difference is certainly not applauded and is dangerous, in fact. And there are so many things about this movie to like, you know, including the acting, the direction of it. But also it depicts a very human character who, not unlike what I said a minute ago about the boxes of commercial filmmaking, here is a human being who doesn't fit into the exact boxes that our society wants people to be within. So I think this movie is truly groundbreaking in many respects.
Moving to horror, we have The Witch, and I admit I haven't seen a lot of horror movies, so what makes this stand out compared to the normal grudge and gore?
This is set in New England about, I don't know, 50 to 100 years before the Salem witch trials, but it has that kind of, you know, vibe to it. The dialogue is written in the way that one imagines people would talk at the time. It has to do with really the first European settlements in New England. You have a family who were expelled from some of the little village, Boston or whatever it was, for being heretics. In a sense, they were even more extreme in their religious beliefs than the extreme people who colonized this place. They're off isolated, miles away from anything, and strange things begin to happen. So it's got this kind of isolation. It's got the New England Salem witch trial vibe going on. It's a very spooky look at the possibility of evil, you know, erupting in the lives of people.
And moving to comedy, we have Frances Foster Jenkins. And anything with Meryl Streep usually is pretty notable. But I feel like this didn't get as much attention as maybe originally intended.
Right, and I don't know exactly why that would be. Maybe it was a bad time to release this movie. It was end of summer, I think. This would have been a movie that would have, I think, benefited from being released more in October. Maybe would have fit the normal Oscar nomination cycle of releases. But a very worthwhile movie. Hugh Grant is in it as the husband of this woman. It's based on a true story about a socialite, wealthy New Yorker of the 30s and 40s who imagined herself as a tremendous opera singer and just didn't have the talent to do it. So there's an element of sadness in this movie also that's very, very moving after a point. It is funny. You could kind of call it a musical in a way. There's, you know, singing and music going on in it. I think a delightful movie that many people who missed it over the summer should look for.
And lastly, we have The Man Who Knew Infinity.
The Man Who Knew Infinity is kind of an old-fashioned, traditional Hollywood way of doing a biographical picture, I must admit. But I just really loved the casting and the theme of this movie, a very important but under-recognized figure in the history of science, a young man from India from a century ago whose way of thinking about things absolutely astonished all of the experts at the time, and he was a relatively uneducated person. Apparently, he anticipated string theory and many other, you know, developments of late 20th century science through his mathematical formula. So I think it told a fascinating story, which we haven't heard enough of, and did it very, very well.
Some honorable mentions you have are The Meddler and The Hollers for, you know, low-key contemporary anxiety dramas or comedy, Chronic and If There's a Hell Below, And a lot of music biographies came out this year, including Elvis and Nixon, Miles Ahead, and I Saw the Light. So what makes these honorable mentions, but perhaps not a top list?
Well, I don't know. This word gets very arbitrary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I wrote in my year-end roundup was that I look back on some of my previous lists, and I have a hard time remembering the movies at the bottom half of the list sometimes because they were good movies, but they just weren't things that you carry with you through life. And I think that some of the movies I mentioned in the honorable mention category are like that. Seeing a lot of movies, I'm usually content if I can say those were 2 hours well spent. But that doesn't make it a great film. It doesn't make it something, you know, that I'm going to, that's going to change my life or my perceptions of reality. And maybe I'm you know, my expectations of what movies can do are too high still. I'm even thinking in those terms. But the movies in my honorable mention list are good movies, you know, amusing, funny, decently written, well cast. And am I going to think about them 2 years from now? Probably not. I didn't mind seeing them.
And Arrival's also on that list. Do you think, if anything, Amy Adams is going to get a lot of attention awards season for that? Do you think a lot of the actors or screenplay, musical score, those components that get the awards and nominations, do you think people on this list are going to get there, or will it fall away from what you picked in your top?
Well, I bet that La La Land is going to get a lot of nominations in let's call them the technical categories, the things that people, you know, go to the kitchen and make their popcorn when they're being, you know, announced during the Academy Awards ceremony. So I think La La Land will do well there. The other movies I'm looking at here on my list, I would imagine Frances Foster Jenkins will get some kind of screenwriting award, as well as Meryl Streep. I'll be shocked if she isn't nominated for Best Actress for this. Hugh Grant might be, you know, up for. And again, I don't know if he would be eligible for supporting actor or actor. I mean, it's minutes of screen time percentage-wise of the film. He was in the movie a lot, so he could maybe be up for actor. But that he did a great job. Moonlight, you know, that's going to be kind of interesting because the Academy, I think, feels under a certain spotlight now as far as dealing with African-American directors, cast, and themes. And Birth of a Nation, unfortunately, flamed out because I think largely the controversy surrounding the personal life of the director of that film. There is a movie, it's a 2016 film officially. It's being released in Milwaukee at the beginning of the year. Hidden Figures, about three African-American women who played an underrated, you know, part in the NASA space project during the early 1960s based on a true story. I imagine that will get some nominations also. Moonlight definitely deserves to be rewarded in some way, maybe in best acting, maybe editing. I could imagine it being considered for that category too.
Another thing you mentioned in your year-end roundup is that creativity has migrated from big to small screens in the era of Netflix originals, people streaming things on their phone. Do you think this will be a problem for film producers and moviegoers going forward because content on Netflix will be much more affordable and just simply more of it versus going to each individual movie?
Well, I still hold out the importance of leaving home and going somewhere, buying a ticket, and sitting in a dark room and with a huge screen bigger than what you probably could have at home, and experiencing something that's worth experiencing in that format. Now, I mean, there unfortunately are a lot of movies, feature movies being made that would look just as well on a tiny little smartphone screen because they're poorly composed, they're visually dull, and they have very little going for them except hopefully, you know, an interesting enough story that you're going to spend some time with it. So for a beautifully made film, from a cinematography standpoint, something that's spectacular to look at, I think it still is important to go to a movie theater and see this thing, unless you really have a, you know, 100-foot screen in your basement or something and have that technology. I don't think you can beat that for that sort of experience. But it seems to me that the Hollywood industry, the feature filmmaking industry, has gotten itself tied up in so many knots over what they expect, you know, audience turnout on opening weekend will be. People producing programs for cable or for the internet now seem to have a luxury of time, of imagining that people are going to come back to these things. I mean, the date of release of the latest wannabe hit program or series, it doesn't really matter. People might discover this 2 weeks later or a year later and begin binge-watching three seasons worth. I mean, the availability of it has changed the way we perceive things. And the luxury of this is that people, you know, creative people can develop a story over time in greater detail, with a greater, larger scope than what a feature film can possibly do. I mean, these things are very much like novels used to be in the 19th century. If you think about Charles Dickens, his novels usually appeared sequentially week after week or month after month in magazines, and people would be really excited to, like, the next chapter of, whatever, Bleak House is arriving in my mailbox. I mean, it's a little bit like that. And I think that a lot of quality, including film directors, Steven Soderbergh and other people, you know, Steven Spielberg, I mean, you know, people of great talent, I think more and more are migrating into, we'll just call it television, for lack of a better word for it right now, because of the frustrations of dealing with studio producers who have increasingly very narrow ideas of what they think will sell in movie theaters. And so, yeah, creativity is migrating for a variety of reasons to the net, to cable, to smaller screens. And it makes me wonder, maybe I should, you know, change my title to television critic or something else. But if it continues in this way, maybe I'm wasting too much time going to movies, but I still like the idea of sitting in the theater watching things on the big screen. And I hope that 2017 will give me at least 6 to 10 things that will stick with me in the coming years.
Well, I'm right with you in that I still enjoy going to the movies. So hopefully we'll see some good ones come 2017.
Right.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you.
Dave Lurson is arts and entertainment editor of the Shepherd Express newspaper and our regular film contributor. He talked with us about the top films of 2016. There is more information about them and a link to his complete review at WUWM.com. 17.